Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. Pleased to welcome back Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Great to have her back, and certainly great to have you listening in as well. Wanted to say a quick thanks to the gang in Wausau. We had a lot of fun yesterday at the UW Marathon County campus. Had a nice talk in the morning with a very great group of people. And then on the air, it was a lot of fun broadcasting from Wausau in our Wausau studios. So thanks to everybody who participated in that. I really appreciate it. Lisa has lots of stuff to talk with us about today, I think, and you may have some questions for her. Maybe it's about garden catalogs or seeds or recommended varieties, or maybe there's something going on with your house plants that you might have a question about. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Lisa, welcome back.
Thanks, Larry.
Great to have you with us. What are you getting questions even in these winter months?
Oh, yes, we certainly do. Actually, our Master Gardener program is going to be starting up at the end of February, so we're getting lots of calls. You know, is the class still open? And asking about what Master Gardeners do, and so on. We also get calls about pruning trees and pruning fruit trees in the winter. Surely get some of those box elder bug calls because they're inside the houses now, and multicolored Asian lady beetle is there too. So
back to the Master Gardeners for a minute. Are the classes full?
Nope. No, we still have openings.
Okay. And if at least for Dane County or for Dane County. And so where would people go? They just call the number?
They just call my office at 608. They can just call me 608-224-3715.
224-3715. Okay. And the reason for these classes are to become a master gardener, are they not?
That's very true. And actually, we try very hard to call them master gardener volunteers because it is actually a community volunteer program. And the training that you get is to go towards doing some community projects, maybe community gardens, could be helping out at Olbrich or at the Arboretum or at our teaching garden. School gardens have been very popular projects. There are a whole lot of things that get done in the community and for our parks and so on that wouldn't get done if it weren't for master gardeners.
Absolutely. They are wonderful people.
And they sure are.
We're talking Dane County here, but of course there are master gardener programs all across Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So you should be checking with your own county.
Right.
And looking into it, your county UW Extension office, probably the place to go, I would guess.
That's exactly right. Yep.
Well, I tell you what, Trish in Madison has a question for you. So why don't we go to Trish? Hi, Trish.
Hi. Hi. How are you guys?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, you bet. Lisa, I have a question for you about my, I hope I'm pronouncing it right. I think it's Clivia.
Yes.
And I would love for it to bloom this spring. I have not had luck with it. I've had it for about 5 years, and I bought it at the indoor farmers market 5 years ago, and it bloomed beautifully that spring and never has since.
Okay.
So I'm wondering what I can do to help it bloom. I'm wondering if I need to put it in the basement in the dark or something.
Well, first of all, let me ask you, is it still in the same pot?
No, I think I repotted it once, and it's got about 3 plants, and it's in, I imagine, a 10-inch plastic pot.
Okay. I know Clivia has some temperature and daylight requirements, and I'm trying desperately to remember what they are. I think we're gonna work on that for a minute, but
sure.
I know they are a tropical plant that can't take too much cold.
Okay.
Now, you say it hasn't bloomed for 5 years?
Yeah, it only bloomed that first year, and I just figured I must be keeping it in too much light during the summer. I've never had a plant like this.
That's really odd, because they aren't all that difficult to get to rebloom.
And see, I've never put it in the dark And that's why, and every year I think, I should really ask someone about this. And I just wondered, maybe I need to, maybe it needs to be in the dark for a while somewhere. In the basement. I don't know. My basement is rather cool.
You mean you put it there during the winter?
I've never have. I'm just saying, I wonder if maybe that's the secret, is to get it in the dark and let it kind of hibernate or something.
Mm-hmm. What we're seeing here is cooler temperatures, not below 50, but, you know, between like 55, 65. For about 6 weeks may help it.
Oh, okay. And does it need to be dark? Like, should I put a box over it?
No.
Okay.
It isn't one of those that loses its leaves like amaryllis does, and, you know, goes dormant. It keeps its leaves, but it just needs cooler temperatures for a period of time.
Okay, well, this is wonderful. I may have already succeeded with that. I moved into a new house, and I've had it out on my three-season front porch well into November, I think, almost.
Okay.
Just
so,
make sure it doesn't freeze.
It did freeze. It didn't freeze, but I was kind of did leave it out there thinking maybe these will be the cool enough temperatures long enough. But I'll put it in my basement and give it a try.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks, Trish. Brian in Cedarburg, we are on to you now. Hi, Brian. Thanks for calling.
Morning.
Morning.
In regards to clivia, I've got a couple dozen of them.
Oh, wow.
I have had them for over 20 years, and they do require a cold period of around 50-degree temperature for the winter time.
The whole winter?
Yes.
Okay.
My garage is heated at about 50 degrees, and I keep them in there. They do want indirect light,
mm-hmm.
not direct light, or they'll burn. And they will bloom every spring for you if you can keep them at about 50 degrees for the winter period.
Is that like when you say winter period, November through?
They will bloom in the garage for me around March. And they stay in the garage. I keep them outside during the summer months
mm-hmm.
in the shade again.
Right, yeah, I know they like shade.
Right. And they'll start blooming in the garage around March. And then
perfect.
If you want to bring them into the house for display, you know, that's an ideal time to do it then.
Oh, perfect.
Thank you.
Very good.
Yeah, Brian, appreciate it very much. Quick response there,
yeah,
Lisa.
Yeah, really.
That's great. Well, let's take another call. By the way, you can join in, too, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@WPR.org. And Vince in Madison up next. Hi, Vince.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Great.
I just have a outdoor spring gardening project that my wife and I have been talking about. We have about 20 to 30 feet of a flower bed that has been sort of ignored for a number of years, and it's completely overgrown and actually unsightly. Our plan is to dig a few things out of there this spring that we like, and then to basically till the rest of it under. I'm wondering, we do need to add soil and that sort of thing to it, but I'd love to really just kind of kill everything that's mm-hmm. in there. What do you recommend for us to put on there to get rid of what's there, and before we add additional soil and then start to sort of replant it so it's not so unsightly?
Okay. I assume that you're talking about weed control then.
Yes, grass. There's not a lot of weeds. It's more grass and just, you know, yeah. the perennials really primarily in there are just spreading out and just need to be controlled a little bit.
Okay, so you're digging out your perennials, and do you have, like, a lot of dandelions or thistles or?
Nope, I'm pretty good on attacking those when they start showing up. It's you know, just, again, primarily grass and the perennials that we're not going to
okay.
dig out and save.
Do you know, is it Kentucky bluegrass or is it quackgrass?
Yeah, I'm not even sure.
Okay. All right. Well, the quack grass and the bluegrass are both perennials, which means automatically it's going to be a little bit harder to kill than, an annual type of plant. But you can use Roundup on those. That's the least toxic product that I can recommend. And also be aware that when you do till up the soil, you are going to bring up some weed seeds that were previously buried that will probably spring joyfully to life. And so it may multiply your problem for a little while. But what I would recommend is killing the grasses off with Roundup. And it may take a couple sprayings to do it, but that's the easiest thing. Some people, like, if they don't want to use Roundup, they'll try killing off the grasses with carpet, and that works pretty well on bluegrass, not so much on quackgrass or crabgrass, but it does take a few months. Okay. So it depends on how much of a hurry you're in, whether you want to go that route.
All right. Would you recommend tilling and then applying the Roundup, or Roundup and then tilling?
No, Roundup first. Kill as many roots as you can before you multiply the problem.
Yeah.
That is one problem tilling. If you're tilling into root systems, you basically are taking cuttings of the root system and creating more weeds for yourself.
Right. And then would you recommend waiting a year before planting in that after Roundupping? Or
No. It's only like 7 to 10 days. You have to check the label of the particular product that you're using. But, yeah, you can plant in it fairly quickly.
All right. Well, I'm sure my wife will appreciate all the work that you've given her now.
Thanks, Vince.
All right, have a good day.
Yeah, you too. All right, let's go to Nicholas in Mundelein, Illinois. Hi, Nicholas.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I acquired a fig tree at the end of the summer, and it was a clipping from an existing fig tree, and it had a sucker root coming up. The fig tree itself was about 6 feet tall, and the sucker root coming up was forming another small tree about a foot and a half tall. And I know that with fig trees, you have to bury them in our climate for the winter. But before I did that, the fellow that I got it from, Filippo, an old Sicilian gentleman, he said that I could possibly cut the bottom sucker root off and plant that separately, perhaps keep that in the house and overwinter it in the house and then put it out in the spring. And the bigger tree that I put outside that I buried, he said that I should just pop that up in the spring, and I was hoping for any additional information regarding getting a fig tree to survive in our climate.
Okay. Mundelein, Illinois, what part of the state are you looking
at? Yeah, just 20 minutes off of the Wisconsin border. So.
Okay. Figs are not hardy in Wisconsin. I think even with burying, our frost goes down too far. So I don't have a whole lot of knowledge in that area. I think you certainly could take that root cutting and grow the smaller plant inside, at least during the growing season. I'm assuming these are eating type figs.
Yeah.
Pretty much the only ones we deal with in Wisconsin are fiddle leaf fig, which is a house plant, and weeping fig, which is also a house plant. But I imagine it could be treated much like he said that you have to bury it. So it reminds me of how we treat tree pruned roses, where you have to dig a trench and bury them. So, yeah, that if that's what he recommended, one thing I might do if I were you is to check for extension publications on figs and see where exactly they're hardy.
Okay.
Our hardiness in Madison is we're in 5A. I don't know, you might be 5B or possibly 6. Where you are, and check and make sure that they're actually hardy here.
Yep.
Okay, and lastly, are figs self-pollinators?
Ooh, now that's a good question. I think they are not. Larry's checking here. Let's see, figs. No, wait a minute. I think, yeah, they are not. They are monoecious, I believe. Let's see here. Yes, they've been hybridized to be self-pollinating.
Okay, so I don't have to have my friend bring his fig tree over.
No. Set up a date.
No. There
okay,
you go.
I appreciate all your information. This is wonderful.
All right. Thanks, Nicholas. Thanks for calling. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest. Rachel Owens, our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Lisa Johnson. Chantel in Troy, Minnesota, up next with a question for us. Let's go there. Hi, Chantel.
Hi. I have a Japanese and a Chinese wisteria that are about 9 years old, and I have them growing on either side of a trellis made out of hog panel. It's about 5.5, 6 feet high, and then I had it meet about 15 feet long. Well, this winter it finally gave out, and they've all fallen to the ground. And I was wondering if I could trim them now, and I was also wondering, is it possible at this late date to try and trim them to tree form?
Okay, let's talk about tree form first. No, it shouldn't be too late to do that. You just choose one stem. You might want to start with, you know, two just to be on the safe side, and then cut off the side branches. Wisteria will bloom on new wood, generally also. Some of them will bloom a little bit on old wood, but it's mostly new wood. So if you do some pruning now, that should be okay.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I found the harder I prune, the more blooms I get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you.
They
so
tend
much.
To be pretty rampant to begin with, and you do need a fairly sturdy trellising system. But that's, you know, a lot of people in Wisconsin are not able to get their wisteria to bloom because it's not hardy north of, you know, zone four, so, or much past five. We do have zone five here in parts of the state, and we can do it. But good for you that you've got it to bloom.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I found a protected area, and lots of mulching the first couple of years is what did it for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Well, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Sharon in Shatek has a comment for us. Hi, Sharon.
Good morning.
Morning.
Several years ago, there was a, I'm sure this is right, extensive article in Fine Gardening. I think I've got every issue. A man, who I think was from the Middle East, moved to California, and he buried his fig trees every single winter.
Hmm.
Yep.
In California.
In California.
Completely buried them, laid them down and completely buried them. I have wintered over roses in unheated garages and heated garages, and I would think that might also work. They'd probably keep growing. But
yeah.
I'd like to add something to your quackgrass and Kentucky Blue.
Mm-hmm.
If a person doesn't want to use Roundup, and please don't plow it because all you're going to do is multiply your quackgrass.
Right.
Put some good loose mulch, grass or hay or straw. I don't think wood chips, but quackgrass will fight to get to the light.
It sure does.
You'll do this for several springs, but it's very easy to pull then. You can just pull it right out of the ground.
Hmm.
And if it's hard to pull, water it while you're pulling it, and the water will help you get it out of the ground.
Yeah,
it's unfortunate that those roots go as deep as they do.
Well, and they remember. They stay alive.
Yeah.
But practicing no-till is probably the very best thing you could do in a garden,
yeah.
I would think, and just mulch.
Yeah, yeah, definitely mulch will help. Not so much with quackgrass, but at least with some of the other weeds.
Yep. Thank you, Sharon. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And we'll turn to Debbie in Rice Lake next. Hi, Debbie.
Hello. I have a question about a much, much larger garden. I have 10 acres of old hayfield that hasn't had anything done with it for quite a while. And we wanted to plow it up and disc it and plant alfalfa this year, this spring. But I hear you talking about if you plow it up, you bring up a whole bunch of other weeds. Is that the same if you're going to plant alfalfa? Is that the process I would take, or do you have another suggestion?
Oh, that's an agriculture question. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, yeah, you're still going to bring up weed seeds. I would assume that you're going to get rid of the existing vegetation using Roundup or something like that.
Well, no, not. But that wasn't the plan, because it's an old hay field, so it does have, you know, hay on it.
You mean you were going to grow the alfalfa in the hay?
In the field?
Yeah.
Is that
possible, or what would
no.
you
suggest?
No, you're not. You're going to have too much competition from
right.
the other. You almost need to get rid of the other
vegetation before you plant the alfalfa.
There,
so you would round up the whole field?
I don't know if I'd round up the whole field. I would. You might want to check.
We have a publication
yeah.
on growing alfalfa.
You might want to go to the Learning Store. It's Learning Store.
UWEX.edu.
And there, and if you go there, there's the publications list, and there's a bulletin on growing alfalfa.
Oh, okay.
And you might, and check with that, because I hate to give a recommendation that I'm not sure of, and I'm sure you're the same way, Lisa.
Yeah, that's more field crops, and I don't do field crops.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that bulletin should be very helpful.
Yeah.
And all right, I'll check it out.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Again, it's Learning Store at
UWEX.edu.
All right. Again, you can join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Have you been into the seed catalogs very much yet,
Oh, yes.
Lisa?
The annual deluge has, or attack of the seed catalogs has begun. And it's always amazing to me every year when that descends, and all the new varieties and mm-hmm.
Anything catching your eye yet? So, or haven't you had a chance to? Really
I haven't look even
at
had a chance to. I've got a pile of them in my office, but I need to get to them soon because I need to order seed for the teaching garden, and. There have been some, I have noticed, actually, there are a few things. The dwarf cucumbers, there's a couple cultivars. One is Rocky and one is, I think it's Cucino, C-U-C-I-N-O. And those are nice. I've been impressed with them because they don't take up as much room, and the cucumber themselves is it's nice for its kid size, so mm-hmm. that's helpful. And also, you know, for adults, you don't have this whole cucumber if you're living alone that you have to try and finish before it rots. So I like those.
Well, let's go to Dave in Cambridge. Dave, hi, thanks for calling.
Hello. A little bit of an idea about the alfalfa. She said she was going to plow, which I think is good. If she could find the mobile or plow, maybe a neighbor or somebody, and turn it over the old hay, and then plant a cover crop along with the alfalfa that was, you know, quick growing like rye or
yeah.
oats and the alfalfa along with it. I think people have done that for many, many years, and I think the weeds would be cut down quite a bit by doing it that way.
Yeah, and I think that may be the recommendation.
That might be the one it says in the bulletin, too.
Yeah, I think you're right, Dave.
Yeah, that annual rye does have some allelopathic effect where it keeps down weeds.
Yeah, keeps down weeds, yeah, but not the alfalfa.
And I don't think she would need to use a a plant.
An herbicide, yeah.
But that's just an idea.
All right, thanks a lot. Thank you for calling, Dave. Appreciate it. All right, good tip there. Let's go to Pat in East Troy next. Hi, Pat.
Hi, how are you, Larry?
Good, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for having your guest on. I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
I have an azalea that did very well all summer long, but was in the process of dying when I decided to bring it in its pot. And the darn thing is blooming right now.
Mm-hmm.
Beautifully.
Great.
This is, I take it, one of the florist's azaleas that isn't hardy here that you use as a houseplant, right?
I guess that was the intention
mm-hmm.
of it. But I'd like to have it continue. Should I be feeding it now? Or
no. At this point in time, you know, I would wait until it finishes up blooming. And then usually about April, you can start fertilizing. You do want to keep the pH pretty low. So when you do use a fertilizer, use something like muriacid. You can also buy products like soil sulfur or iron sulfate to help keep the pH low. And I would also, you want to make sure that it doesn't get too dry, that it stays kind of evenly moist. They do tend to bloom this time of year or a little bit later, and usually they'll go for 3 weeks or 4 weeks. And beautiful. The cooler that you can keep it, the longer it will continue to bloom. So, you know, if you can keep it mm-hmm. at 60 degrees or even 55, that will help prolong the bloom.
Well, that's good. That's exactly what it's getting right now.
Excellent.
my other question is, I'm having a brain freeze on getting the right name, but a blue snowball bush that this one was grown in California and was in bloom for Mother's Day.
It's a hydrangea, I'm betting.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, that's it.
Oh, unfreezing my brain. Feels very good. I was able to keep it going all summer long, and just before frost set in, I took it in its original pot and moved it to another one with better soil
mm-hmm.
and cut it back wherever it seemed to be drying up and not alive anymore. And now it is up next to the azalea bush in a window in a cool place, and it is getting leaves all over the stubs that I had cut off.
Good. So you're getting some new growth.
Well, yeah, but how am I going to get it back into the blue snowball blooming?
Okay. It was probably, you say you got it for Mother's Day?
Yes.
Okay. They may have forced it to get it to bloom at that time, but usually here, most of the hydrangeas are going to bloom, you know, in end of May, middle yeah. of May. But Mother's Day is close to that. I wouldn't expect it to bloom this winter, but a little later in the spring. And again, you do need to keep the soil on the acid side in order to keep the blooms blue colored. Otherwise, they'll start to turn pink.
Pink, yeah.
And if you're putting them out, either plant outside for the summer, I wouldn't put either one of them in direct sun.
Okay.
I'd put them in partial shade.
Well,
but yeah, it should bloom for you again.
What did you say?
It should bloom for you again.
Oh, good. Well, keeping it acid will make it turn blue. And
mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep.
Do I keep on adding something?
You may only need to do it once a year or so. And just when you do fertilize, use an acid fertilizer like muriacid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, thank you so much.
Right. You're welcome.
Very exciting.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Pat. Appreciate your call. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Kathy in Ogama next. Hi, Kathy.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
My family loves tomatoes.
Yeah.
Okay, and we do a lot of the organic. We don't buy a lot of our food from stores.
Okay.
And we can't seem to get a good enough crop of tomatoes.
Hmm.
Okay. What's the problem?
I don't know. We have tried growing them with really rich soil. They all seem to not ripen.
Oh, okay. So you do get tomatoes that form. They just don't turn red?
Yeah.
Okay. How much sun have you got them in?
Full sunlight.
Full sun. Okay. So at least 6 or 8 hours of sun.
Yeah.
Okay. I wonder if you're choosing tomatoes that ripen later in the season. Are you using like some heirloom types that really...
We like the cherry tomatoes.
Okay.
Oh, man,
that
they
shouldn't
be
a problem.
That should not be a problem. That's hard to imagine. So they never get red? Or they just...
They get red, but they seem to go from red to rotting in like really short amount of time.
When do they turn red? Do you have a time?
It's like middle of August, end of August.
Middle of August.
That's about right.
That's about right for, but then you're getting blossom end rot or something like that with them.
Yeah,
they turn brown on the base of the tomato.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That does
that's
sound like tomato blossom end rot. That's the underlying cause is that there is some moisture stress where. We usually see more of this in years where we have droughty conditions, and particularly if you're growing tomatoes in a pot or something, and then they get too dry, and then you water them, and then they get too dry again. Mm-hmm. And what happens is that the fruit can't pull up enough calcium out of the soil fast enough. And so as the fruit is, usually you see this when the fruit is developing, it sometimes happens when they're still green, but often when after they've turned red, and it happens at the base of the fruit usually that you see this, or at the blossom end, I should say. And you can try a calcium spray, but the real thing to do is just to make sure that they stay evenly moist. Now, this also can happen to bell peppers and other kinds of peppers and eggplant. Have you seen it on those crops?
We don't really grow the green peppers and
Okay. Okay.
Okay, well, you needed about an inch of water
a week. Yeah.
Okay.
So if Mother Nature does not provide...
you need to provide.
Right, yeah. And also, if you're having any problems with foliar diseases, if you put a mulch of hay around the base of the plant, that will help separate it from the soil, because a lot of those foliar diseases are soil-borne, and when rain or irrigation water splashes up and hits the leaves, then you tend to have problems. But if you mulch, then that will create a barrier so that those spores can't get through, as well as helping with your moisture retention problem. And also, some people will even take off the very bottom leaves so that there aren't leaves to catch those spores.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Okay. How about moving a plant from outside to indoor? Like a tomato plant from outside to indoor.
Tomato plant?
Yeah.
people have done it, but it doesn't work very well.
Yeah. If you want to grow a tomato plant indoors, I would start it from seed or start it from a transplant in spring. When you try and dig it up out of garden soil and move it inside, typically you end up bringing in a lot of pests with you, white fly and all kinds of things that might be in the soil that are maybe not such a problem when it's outside. But when you bring it inside, first of all, the soil tends to turn into a brick in the pot. And if you're going to grow it inside, you really should grow it in potting soil. Also, just trying to keep it in enough light, especially during the winter, is a big challenge.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy, for calling. And let's turn to Sally in Wayland, Minnesota. Hi, Sally.
Hello, Larry, and hello to your guest, and I miss Jim. What I'm calling about is the seed catalogs are arriving, and it's very, very, very exciting. It never ceases to amaze me at the new varieties and the new techniques.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm calling about today is grafted tomato plants. Mm-hmm. Very exciting. They're saying that the rootstock variety will contribute to the vigor and the disease resistance, and that the scion will be for fruit flavor and quality. And the grafting improves overall plant health and yields. And, of course, the pictures of the grafted and the non-grafted are actual pictures. They're not cartoons, and mm-hmm. they are very impressive.
Yeah.
So they're going to be charging $6 for a single graft and $12 for a double graft.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, for that money, I can graft it myself.
Mm-hmm.
my question is, they are advertising the different varieties for the scion, because they're trying to sell them, but they're not advertising. They're
what
not
the rootstock is?
The rootstock, yeah. So
yeah.
What would you say would be a good recommendation for when I go to graft my own?
You know, I'm really not sure what they're using. I've certainly heard of the grafted tomatoes, but I too have not heard what rootstock is being recommended. What this reminds me of is that, for example, heirloom variety tomatoes, although they taste so wonderful, tend to be very prone to disease. Whereas some of the other tomatoes that are more modern maybe don't have the flavor. So I'm assuming they're using one of those more modern cultivars that were bred for disease resistance. Brian Huddleston of the Plant Pathology Lab says that the genes for flavor and disease control are very close to each other, so that generally you can either have a highly resistant tomato that tastes like cardboard, or you can have a very tasty tomato that gets full of disease and you may not be able to get a good harvest. So I'm not really sure what rootstock they would be using, but I would assume that it is a disease-resistant one.
I can see the benefit of a graft in this case.
Yeah.
I can definitely see the benefit, and I am on a mission. I am going to find out, and I am going to graft them for this spring.
Okay. Well, let me give you the name, then, of somebody who may be able to help you with that. We have some vegetable people at the university. A.J. Busson, and his last name is spelled B-U-S-S-A-N. He's in the horticulture department, and he is a vegetable specialist, and he may be able to help you with that.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lisa Johnson, our guest today, Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk. Dwayne and Madison up next with a question, so let's go to Dwayne. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello. I got a Christmas cactus last year, and it didn't bloom this year. Just wondering, how do you make it bloom?
Don't water it. Keep it cool.
Yeah. Larry took the words right out of my mouth. Keeping it cool. Holding back on the water a little bit. Did it bloom for you around Christmas or around Easter last year?
I think I got it for Christmas, actually,
okay.
Last year.
Okay. It's daylight influenced, so it responds to the shorter days. That's what usually gets it to bloom, along with, you know, keeping it cool. And they also like to be somewhat pot-bound. The other thing is they don't like a whole lot of fertilizer. So if you have been using a lot of fertilizer, that could be why it isn't blooming. And if it gets a lot of, like if you have it in a setting where it gets a lot of light at night, that may be also interfering with it.
That's it. It's in the same pot it was in last year, but it does get a lot of late-day sunlight. And I water it probably half a cup to a cup once a week.
That's too much.
Water.
Try watering it every week and a half.
Okay.
And get it out of the sun.
Well,
all right, I'll find a new spot.
Yeah.
What I was more worried about was that it was getting artificial light at night, which would sort of prolong its day.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much that it likes sun, but not south or west sun. That's a little too intense.
It is in the living room, so it does get artificial light during the end of the day.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. I had one in my office that bloomed all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just constantly bloomed, and I never watered it. And because just once in a while, I'd think of it, and I never fertilized it. And it was the healthiest plant.
Benign neglect.
Oh, man. Well, Dick in Broadhead has a comment, I think, on alfalfa. Dick, hi.
Yeah, a couple of things on alfalfa. Number one, before they do anything, they should test their soil, because alfalfa is a very a plant that likes a very high pH soil. It likes a sweet soil.
Yeah.
On their existing crop, it's on that 10 acres, I think she said it was.
Yeah, it sounded like it was a hay field.
Uh-huh. They can use Roundup and put that on, in the fall is the time to do it, late August, early September, and then leave it for about, depending on the moisture you get after you make the application, 15 to 18 days,
mm-hmm.
and all the vegetation that's growing should be dead.
Then mow it before they disc?
No,
or?
No. Well, they can. They could take a crop of hay off of it, you know, like in early September.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they get that off, go ahead and put the Roundup on. And then let it set for 15 to 18 days. Then they can go ahead and plow it. And put their alfalfa seed on in the fall, along with a cover crop like rye or winter wheat.
How about oats?
Yeah, oats works too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Depends on whether you want to harvest that crop or not.
Yeah.
Well, you could harvest the rye, too, and use it as a hay crop.
Yeah, I know Leslie from Wisconsin was recommending oats as a possible.
Yeah, oats. Traditionally, you had horses, traditionally oats was a crop to put on with alfalfa.
Makes sense.
Because they use it for horse feed. So.
Yeah, that makes sense. Did you ever do a burn on a plant, on a field like that, Dick?
A fire burn? No.
Yeah.
No. I imagine it's possible, but fire don't kill everything.
Yeah.
That's very true.
With Roundup, too, you have to use Roundup before your weeds and stuff start going dormant in the fall, because once they're dormant, Roundup won't work.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite true, and it also has to be above 40 degrees.
Yes, it does. That's why I say mid to late September, early October at the latest is the time to do it.
All right. Thanks, Dick.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate the call. And kind of backs up what some of our other people were emailing about. Chris did say he recommends a prairie burn for alfalfa. Of course, you need a permit to do that.
Yeah, right.
So be careful about that, too.
The other thing is, though, a prairie burn, if you've got quack grass in there, that's not going to kill the roots.
No, it's not. All right, Lori in Richfield, we turn to you next. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I have a very large area, and it's on a hill that I'm trying to establish wildflowers in. And this past fall, what I did is I collected seeds from every wildflower field I could possibly find. And I currently have all those seeds in shoeboxes in the refrigerator. And I want to broadcast them on this field in the spring. What would be the best way to actually broadcast them out on the hill? I don't have to worry too much about erosion to get them to germinate.
Okay.
But it's not an area that I can get in there by hand and actually plant seeds. It's way too big, and it's too steep to really be in there.
Is there vegetation there currently?
Yes, I did 2 years ago plant about 14 pounds worth of wildflower seeds. And it was rather disappointing this past year. It was beautiful the first year when I planted them, and then it was very disappointing this year. And so I collected a lot more seeds, and now I want to just overseed again.
Why was it disappointing this year? I mean, what about it was
There wasn't a lot of color. There weren't a lot of.
Yeah, that's
okay. So like they didn't survive, basically.
Or sometimes the first year you get those plants that flower and look great, and then it takes another couple years sometimes to get those other ones up and going.
Yeah, prairies usually take about 3 years to really come into their own, and typically during those 3 years, weed management is the biggest issue, and particularly when you have a site like yours where it's hard to get into, can be kind of a challenge. What they usually do with prairie seed, I've seen it fall planted, actually. And what they did was, this was a project that I helped with at Ice Age Trail. And we broadcast the seed, and then they used a roller, which obviously you're not going to be able to do in your site, to make sure that there was good seed-to-soil contact. And I think that may be where you're having the problem with just broadcasting, is that the seed is not getting enough contact with the soil, that it's staying there, not blowing away. And then we did some watering as well to make sure that it was there, and then put a layer of hay over it, or straw or what have you. Since you've already got vegetation there, which is good, that will at least help hold some of the seed there. I don't know how you would be able to make sure there's good seed-to-soil contact except by watering, since your site is not one you can use a roller on. So that's what I would try and do is water it. There is a machine called a hydro seeder. I know that it's used with grasses on hillsides, like, you know, the DOT will use that on steep sites. They usually also have netting put down there, but you don't need that because you've already got some plants. I don't know whether you can use that, though, with native seed, because you've got a lot of forbs in with your grasses, and a lot of them tend to be kind of irregular shape and so on, but that's something you could maybe investigate if the hand watering is not feasible.
Watering would not be a problem. Well, it's a challenge, but I can do it, because I did it the
get
first
a sprinkler
year
up there.
But, you know, 4 or 5 sprinklers, but it actually, that's not as much of a problem. I'm just that soil contact. So maybe renting a hydro seeder and putting all those seeds into the hydro seeder with the, I don't know, what is paper product or
yeah, they use a paper product and water, but like I said, I'm just not sure that the seeds are suited for that particular machine. What you might do is check with the let's see, you could call Prairie Nursery in Westfield and see what they would recommend for that site. Neil Dybal is one of the best known prairie seed producers. You could also check with Agricol. They also produce prairie plant seeds and might be able to tell you more about the hydro seeding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for calling. And we had several emails in about figs.
Getting the odd ones today. Figs.
Phil lives in Melrose Park, Illinois. It's a Zone 5, and they have a very strong Italian influence in that community.
Ah.
And the bending down and burying of a fig tree on the front lawns is well established there. The local citizens proudly refer to this as an Italian grave.
That's interesting.
And another person, John and Shatek, have some friends in Chicago who also do the same thing. He lays it down as flat as he could. He digs up one side of the roots so that you can bend it over.
Right, just like you would with a tree rose.
Lay a plastic cover over it, cover it with leaves for the winter. But that's in Chicago.
Yeah, that's, I was trying to think what zone they are.
That could be.
They might be six.
Six? Jane, though, is from this area, And she's had three trees for 6 years in the town of Bristol, which is northeast of Madison. They bury them outside, and they're fine. Had them for 6 years.
Well, okay. We're going to have figs in the teaching garden next year.
I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Well, I do, too.
And Anne, who is a faithful listener from Appleton, as this is another topic. She saves eggshells in her freezer. She crushes them as they accumulate, and then in planting season, she works the shells into the holes she prepares for tomatoes and peppers. And she said she hasn't had a slug or a pepper or a calcium problem in years. The slugs don't like the sharp edges of the eggshells.
I bet they don't.
So there's another tip. And I tell you what, we've got had lots of great tips here. Lisa Johnson, our guest, with us on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here on this edition of Garden Talk, visiting with Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator. Great to have her here, and thank you for listening. Call us with your questions at 800-642-1234. Give a call. And emails, too. Pearl from Waukesha says, my Norfolk pine has some brown branches since I brought it in from outdoors in fall. Should I be providing it with something to make the soil acid like muir acid?
Probably that's not what's causing the brown branches. Typically, we see that on lower branches that get shaded out. That's what typically causes it, or if the plant has not been receiving a adequate water supply, it sometimes will drop branches as well. During the winter, we usually don't fertilize our house plants a whole lot because they're receiving a lot less light and they just can't use the fertilizer to put into new growth because they're not getting enough light and heat at this time of year. So usually we would start a fertilizer program in April or so. And if you use something like a slow-release granular fertilizer, you only have to put it on about once a year, which is great if you have problems remembering to do it like I do. You can also use organic products like fish emulsion, but keep in mind that fish emulsion in particular has a bit of odor to it. So that's maybe not one that you want to use if the plant's going to be in close proximity to where you are all the time.
Let's turn to Kim in Appleton next. Kim, hi to you. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Last year we suffered early tomato blight. Unfortunately, we caught it early and removed all the plants in the area. And a number of friends have offered us suggestions. But I'm wondering what your recommendation is for preparing the soil in that garden area to prepare for this next garden season.
Okay. I want to make sure that I'm dealing with the right disease that is the one that you had. There is a tomato leaf disease that's called early blight, and that is a foliar disease where you get spots. There's another one called septoria leaf spot where you get spots, and those are soil-borne diseases. Tomato late blight is the one that causes the whole plant to collapse, and you do need to pull the plant out. But for early blight, which is just a foliar problem, you don't need to take the plant out of the ground. So which one is it?
Well, I think maybe we were a little early on that after hearing your comment there. It was on the leaf, and we maybe mistook it for a different variety, but we went ahead as a preemptive strike and pulled all of the plants. But we were getting black spots on the leaves.
Okay.
And it started at the base and was moving upward.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds like early blight or septoria leaf spot. And those are typically not something that's going to kill the plant. it might affect your harvest a little bit, but it is soil-borne. Unfortunately, there's not much that you can do soil preparation-wise to get rid of it in the soil. But again, if you use a mulch around the base of the plant and remove the bottom leaves, that will help a whole lot in the transmission, because the fungal spores won't be able to splash up on the leaves then when you water or when we get rain. So it's very common to have those two diseases. You can try and look for disease-resistant tomato varieties, but it's one of those things typically that we just kind of say, okay, yeah, that's Septoria and that's yep. early blight. We do have some very nice fact sheets on both of those diseases. You can find them on the plant disease. If you Google PDDC, that should get you to the University Plant Disease Diagnostics Clinic site and their fact sheets on those two diseases.
There you go.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Kim. Thanks for calling. And Gail in Eau Claire, we're turning to you next. Hi, Gail. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on when the woman might want to try planting her native seeds.
Mm-hmm.
We have been restoring our land to native plants for the last 22 years, and we have planted spring, fall. And one of our best success stories is when we planted over the snow in late January, and we had excellent germination. And what we found is you don't have to rake or pack the site when you plant over the snow, because the alternating freezing and thawing, actually, it's kind of like the frost seeding, but we did it over snow. The forb germination is great during the first growing season. There's high moisture conditions at the time of germination, so you don't need to water as much, and it eliminates the need for cold, moist stratification of the seed.
Yeah.
And so we've just really had great success with that. And we mixed our seeds with sawdust, and we did hand broadcast them.
Did you, was this on a hilly area at all, or was this
No,
flat?
This was kind of in an area where, down in a valley, it isn't a real steep slope, but we had a lot of erosion in that area with spring thaw.
Did you have a lot of the seeds washing out or ending up?
Not to our knowledge, no.
Okay. Because I know that can be a problem, especially if we have a lot of snow, and when it melts in the spring, you get some runoff.
Yes. But
that'd be worth a try.
It would be worth a try. She could experiment with some of the seed this winter and just see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a source that she might want to look at is Prairie Moon Nursery in Winona has a great catalog on site that talks about using this kind of seeding.
Thanks, Gail.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate the call very much. More good tips there. And Bob in New Glarus, let's go to you now. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. I have a question on milorganite for use in the vegetable garden. Because that's made from municipal waste, is that a problem?
I'm not sure that it is labeled for vegetable gardens.
I don't think it is.
I don't think it is.
No.
It certainly you can use it in lawn situations. Unless they have another product that I'm not aware of, I don't think that's labeled for vegetable gardens.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you for calling. And we have an email from Linda. It's a rather large red pine that's on the border between her property and a small suburban park. The pine has several branches in which most of the needles have turned brown. Browning is concentrated on the south side of the tree. Last year, I pruned several branches that had more grown brown needles than green. However, it seems as though the upper branches are now turning brown as well. This is not the annual browning and dropping of needles by the pine. Do you know what's wrong with the tree? What may be wrong with the tree?
Okay, you said it's between two buildings. That's right, Larry?
On the border between our property and a small suburban park.
Okay.
Nothing about buildings.
Okay. All right. First of all, the way that pines naturally grow, they do tend to shade out their own bottom branches. If you walk through a pine forest, you'll notice that the only branches that have living needles are way above your head, and that there's a lot of dead branch stubs down below. So that is part of how they grow. It could be drought as well. Now, I know we had a lot of rain in the spring. However, at least in the Madison area, we were very dry during the summer and fall, and that can cause that sort of problem. If you noticed spots on the needles in little rows, it could be a needle disease, rhizosphera. There are several other needle-type diseases that it also could be, if you're noticing it now on the top. I guess the best thing to try and do would be to try and collect some needles from living and infected tissue, if you know you have some needles that are half brown, and then send them to Brian at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic to see if it is a disease. I am suspicious, though, because you said it was on the south side, that it is possibly either drought-related or it could be winter burn, which happens when we have temperatures above normal in the winter and the evergreens start to respire and give off water from their needles, and they can't unfortunately pull up any more from the soil because the soil is frozen. And we see more of this in years where we've had a dry fall, and so the trees have gone into winter not being well hydrated. So we always recommend that you, if we have a dry summer and particularly a dry fall, that you water your evergreens. So I would check out those two possibilities as being the most likely.
And we got an email from Randy in regard to the call about grafting tomatoes.
Ah.
He copied this portion of a message from his High Tunnel listserv. Johnny's is a wholesale seed company, of course, is from Johnny's.
Right, Johnny Selected Seeds.
And Johnny's offers seeds for two root stocks, both at $20.95 per 50 seeds.
Ow!
Yeah. I use the Maxifort, although the Beaufort is supposedly very good also. The advantage of these over other standard hybrids is the extreme vigor of this rootstock. I threw one or two away when the graft failed in my hospital heap compost pile, and the darn thing resprouted and took over the whole corner of the garden.
Oh, my gosh.
I left it out of curiosity. It went to seed.
I wonder if you can collect those
maybe
seeds then and
maybe
save them for grafting for the next year. So Maxifort and Beaufort,
yeah,
right?
And Johnny's had
those two.
As possibly Jung's has them too. For that,
yeah,
matter.
Yeah.
We could check it out. Dana in Madison, it's on to you now. Hi, Dana.
Hi. Last year I started container gardening, and recently I heard someone on this program talk about square foot gardening, and I wondered about combining the two, if that was a good idea, if they were compatible.
You mean in the same space?
I'm sorry, what?
In the same space, when you say combining.
It combine them in the same, like take a container and design it to be in a square foot garden planting.
You could. It sounds like more work, though, than you really need to go to. I would certainly continue to use containers if you're short on space.
Yeah.
But if you've got raised beds, there are some crops that work better in the square foot method than others. Like, you know, lettuces work really well, but something big like tomatoes, it's really hard, or cucumbers, to get them to work in the square foot method. One thing you can do if you do want to grow vine crops is you can use trellises for your cucumbers, your squash, watermelon, etc., that will help with the space issue. The other thing is that for some crops, including the squash, there are bush varieties that you can get instead of the full vining glory that spreads all over your yard. We do have a publication on square foot gardening. It's on actually, it talks about raised beds. It talks about square foot gardening. And
but I mean containers specifically because that's the only room that I have.
No.
Oh, so you mean you have a big container that you want to do the square foot method in?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes. I was imagining you taking a pot and sinking it into the soil. And
No.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I was thinking, boy, that's a lot of work. How big are your containers?
They're big, like children's buckets, children toy buckets that people threw out, you know, maybe the size of a whiskey barrel.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and so would it be better to plant tomatoes maybe in the notion of the square, like 1-4 in one pot in each corner?
If it's only the size of a whiskey barrel and you've got a full-size tomato that you can only fit one or possibly two.
Maybe two.
Yeah, okay. in a whiskey barrel-size pot.
And if you put two in, you're going to get half the production
out
right, of both.
Because so they're...
What if you did herbs instead of in a long pot, if you did them in squares in
a
container?
That would be fine. Basil, rosemary, and you can do lettuce that way. You can do carrots. Well, carrots usually end up being a little bit closer than that, but radishes.
Sure.
All kinds of things.
Okay.
You could even do peppers in a square foot.
Okay. That's what I was thinking about.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. And Joanne in Livingston, your turn now. Hi, Joanne.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have these, well, they did look really nice, tall arborvita, older bushes or shrubs, and after this heavy snowfall, which sat on them for a long time, they separated and divided. They looked just horrible.
Did they actually break?
No, they didn't. But what can I do to get them back to their pyramid shape?
They probably will recover in spring. We had some that were bent over almost double that actually did come back. But for the moment, if you have an old pair of pantyhose...
Get out there with
your pantyhose and tie them kind of loosely.
Sure.
You don't want them to end up binding, but... that's one of the recommended things to do. And then you can...
Appreciate that. But I have one more question
for
you. I had some tomatoes growing this summer, and while they were still green, I noticed one day all this white foamy matter on them. I thought maybe a dog came in and threw up on my tomatoes.
Spittlebugs.
It was just a big mass.
Yeah, that
huge mass.
Larry's right. It's probably spittlebug.
Well, I know what that is, but would you have a mass covering 3 or 4 tomatoes?
And then they
turn black.
Okay, that's probably sooty mold that was growing on it.
That's what I was wondering if it was a fungus or something.
And that's just the fungus taking advantage of the nutrition that's been put out for it by the spittlebugs. But really just a good hard stream of water will usually knock those things off. The spittlebug is a little green bug that's in the middle of that spitty mass, and it produces that mass to live in and breed in. And occasionally we do get infestations of them. Usually you just see them, you know, here and there. And fortunately, like I said, they're pretty easy to get rid of with just a stream of water.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And can those tomatoes be saved then?
They
be
disposed of?
Yeah, they should be fine.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I really enjoy your program.
Thanks, Joanne. Thanks for calling. And Tom and Antigo, on to you. Hi, Tom.
Yes. Robert Tomich had an article recently in the paper that on recommending gooseberries and currants to be grown in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
He recommended a number of plants, and I was kind of wondering in general, how popular are those plants, gooseberries and currants, for fresh eating?
Well, there have been some new varieties that have been developed recently for fresh eating. I see a lot of currant jam and so on at the farmer's markets. So I think probably most of it tends to go into jam making or pies or something like that and less for fresh eating.
Because they're too sour?
Well, they do need a bit of sugar to really be very palatable. But again, some of those new varieties have a higher sugar content.
Okay. And which one do you think is generally more popular, gooseberries or the currants?
I think the currants. They're both spiny plants, so
yeah.
They can be a bit of a challenge to harvest. The other thing is that if you have white pines growing near your currants, there is a disease that you should be aware of, white pine blister rust, that cycles between the two plants and can be fatal for the white pine. So,
what about for the currant?
For the currant, it just it affects the leaves and it may impact your fruit production. But back when in the CCC days, they actually had a program where they had them running around the countryside getting rid of all the currants and gooseberries they could find to try and alleviate the problem for the timber production for the white pines. Yeah. Wasn't successful because the pollen drifts for miles. So, but it has been a concern in Wisconsin. So you might also check for which gooseberries and currants are least susceptible or most resistant to that disease.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Tom. A couple of comments on Christmas cactus. Margot says, her cactus blooms every year around Christmas times. I put it outside in the early summer under a tree so it doesn't get direct sun. Mm-hmm. I leave it there until freezing temperatures come, and within 2 days of bringing it in the house, I have buds forming.
Well.
So that's one way to do it. And Scott in Mequon says the only thing that has ever affected his Christmas, he has 6 to 8 cactus, Christmas cacti,
cool,
for 30 years. Is changing the plant's position. If he moves the plant, then they don't flower.
He must have a perfect little area for
them.
Yeah,
he keeps them on an east window, on or next to a radiator.
Wow,
which is really strange.
That is very strange.
And those are a couple of questions there. And Nancy in Fitchburg says, "I know you can continue to harvest spinach through the winter. We've done this in years past. I want to plant spinach now and grow it in our sunroom. Do you think it's worth trying?"
Yes, you can do that. If the sunroom is cool, that is going to be better for the plant than if it's a very hot environment. We have had problems with aphids that tend to get into it when we grow it inside. One thing you do have to worry about is the spinach bolting. If your artificial light source, if you have artificial light, is on too many hours, because spinach is a short day. Let me think about this for a second. It when the days start to get longer, or you know your light is on too long, then that stimulates them to bloom. Yeah, or bolt.
Yeah. Thank you, Lisa. Thanks so much. Lisa Johnson, she'll be back. We'll do this again with her on Garden Talk. And thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.